Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you all. Welcome once again to the Elevated Places Network. It is the 24th day of March, 2022, and it is such a pleasure to be with you once again. I am Sister Ava Muhammad. My host is co-host is Brother Terrence Muhammad. Sister Rona Muhammad is our executive producer and our legal contributor, attorney, and really tonight's major moderator is attorney Sister Pamela Muhammad. And we are so thrilled that we continue to celebrate the season of Savior's Day 2022 and the Swan Song. We have a great deal of material for you tonight. We have an exciting program for you, and I'm going to quickly turn the microphone over to Brother Terrence Muhammad to take us further into the program, because there's a piece of research I want to confirm for tonight's program, before we get to our main discussion, if that's okay with you, Brother Terrence.
It is okay with you and your show, Dr. Ava. Whatever you like, we can get it started. We definitely can get right into it.
Yes, sir.
So,
thank you, sir.
Yes, ma'am. So welcome to everyone to this wonderful and amazing Thursday night where we are always excited and just uplifted to be on as Dr. Ava with the Elevated Places Network. It is a beautiful day in the neighborhood. We just entered into springtime this past Sunday. So the seasons are about to change, but don't get it twisted. I don't know about your city and state, but my city, March and April are bipolar. So it may be sunny one day, but it could be a blizzard the next day. So we want to make sure that as we're transitioning in these seasons, that we don't get caught out there. Shout out and prayers for those that suffered the tornadoes down in New Orleans. And shout out to student minister Willie Muhammad, who let me know the other day that the believers are fine. They are okay. And there was no report of damage at that time. I think that was maybe 2 days ago. There was no damage, or he let me know yesterday that there was no damage for the believers' property, which is a good thing. Sad to say that one of the locations, La Paz in Louisiana, La Paz area, there was one hit by Ida last year, and those boats were moved to another location, and that location that they moved to got hit by these tornadoes. And it reminded me of when people move from New Orleans to Texas because of Katrina, and then they got hit with Harvey while they was in Texas. And So we definitely need to watch the weather. Prayers for those that did catch devastation in the Ninth Ward of New Orleans from these horrific tornadoes. So we just want to be mindful. And as we're looking at going to springtime, we also, in a short amount of days, just in a couple of weeks or within the week, we will be entering into the holy month of Ramadan, and we are getting excited. We're getting ready, getting prepared for that wonderful holy month of Ramadan. So we want to make sure that our, everyone, not just Muslims, get ready for the holy month of Ramadan. So as we have always let people know, and we continue to say, because I don't know about you, you know, some of us are asking, you know, they ain't seen COVID lately. Have y'all seen COVID? Well, COVID is still around. See, COVID is playing games. It's hiding around the corner while y'all think COVID ain't there, and he's sneaking up on folks and knocking folks out. So, you know, so y'all just be careful. COVID is still around. We want to still carry out the protocols, 6 feet, wash your hands, do whatever necessary to make sure, one, how to eat to live, and two, boosting our immunes. Because regardless of COVID, we should always be properly eating eating the right foods at the right time. So get books 1 and 2 of How to Eat to Live at store.finalcall.com, store.finalcall.com, and learning how to boost our immunity. But that was leading me into always remember, and don't forget to continue to listen and go back and study July 4th, 2020, the lecture from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, The Criterion. That is still going on today, and we want to make sure that we haven't forgotten about The Criterion, as we're also studying the Swan Song from February 27th this year, 2022, for our Savior's Day, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, the delivery of the Savior's Day message, the Swan Song. We want to make sure that we're still nursing on the divine guidance and words and message from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And those that are excited and want to learn more, you can come check us out Sunday at 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern, or join us tomorrow night at study.noy.org tomorrow night, 7:30, and join us on Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. NOI.org. So there's a lot going on, and we definitely want to make sure that you are continuing to go to MinisterAva.com and learning more, and all of the books and lectures and ebooks. And if you didn't know anything, or you didn't see anything, or you missed all of the master's classes from last year, you can go to MinisterAva.com and check them out, and we will be giving you more information about the upcoming master's class for men and women that we want to make sure that you can be a part of. Don't want to miss the master's class, but all of that information is at MinisterAva.com. So we do have a wonderful show, but before I go into the show, you know, Dr. Ava, I just was just thinking about our sister Ketanji Brown Jackson and everything that's going on in these hearings, confirmation hearings, and it's a lot of different things that's going on. Just the disrespect that has gone on, and we always see the things that go on with black women and what black women have to suffer. And then there's a lot of memes out there, like the expressions that you can see in her face that shows what when a black woman is just holding it in and trying to be patient and taking it in, and all of the different expressions. Some people have made memes of her holding in as they are examining and cross-examining and questioning her, and, you know, and then question her abilities when she is more qualified in a lot of different areas. But then it's just that we have to go through this. And then Senator Cory Booker, you know, said some good words about him seeing his mother, his sister, you know, the ancestors, and what she, you know, is doing for black women. Powerful things, and powerful as our sister, Black Women's Roundtable, Melanie Campbell, and those that have come out and have people call their senators in support of our sister. That's a beautiful thing. And then on the flip side of that, Dr. Ava, it was just very interesting to see Dr. Patrick Jackson, her husband. You know, it was very deep, because as everybody was supporting Kamala Harris, you know, she still had her white Jewish husband. And that's not to say, I just guess I'm just saying that for myself. It's just very interesting that, you know, these powerful black women, but, you know, it's a thing. But hopefully when we do support those in a position, you know, that we are doing more than just the one position, that we're actually trying to do our own project separation and have our own, because it has taken us so long just to get this one person to possibly be on Supreme Court. How long would it take us to get two again? So I'm kind of almost tired, Dr. Ava, after hundreds of years waiting for the first, because we know next year, we know it'll be the 60th anniversary of the March on Washington, and will we still be saying we are fighting for jobs and justice? And if we would be doing that next year, it'll be sad that after 60 years, we're still crying for jobs and justice. So we're going to continue to watch the confirmation hearings and support not only just that she's our sister, and we know that she's going through this scrutiny and this I would say drama, because that she is a black woman, and that's more definitely that's going on in the news. Kyrie Irving and things that's going on with that. But we're going to get to that, and we're going to get to more. But I just wanted to cover a few of those things, but continue to hear the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Oh, and before I forget, I forgot last week. I can't forget again. Just be on the lookout. Be on the lookout, because our executive producer is getting ready to jump out there. And I can say this because she put it on social media. But our executive producer is getting ready to go. She's about to show out. She's about to let you see, not only hear her, about to let you see her. She's getting to jump out there and do some amazing things shortly. So be on the lookout for Sister Rona live and direct. So you might just want to check out MinisterAva.com to find out about that. Or just stay tuned to the show. And shout out to Sister Valerie on Twitter. She's always making sure that everybody knows about the show. So shout out to Sister Valerie for keeping everybody informed on Twitter and making sure the flyers out there and certain quotes from our guests that gets out there on social media. We really appreciate all those that make sure that people hear us, Sister Georgina, those that I know that are constantly retweeting, sharing live while we're on the show. Back to you, Dr. Ava.
Yeah, thank you so much, Brother Terrence. Just a little point of clarification on, and of course, it's so important to study and read the Final Call newspaper. There's been coverage of Ukraine, and of course, the swan song is being printed in segments. So part four of the swan song is in the current issue of the Final Call newspaper. The cover page is entitled "On the Brink of a Pit of Fire." And of course, I really urge all of us to, and I say this with pleading, please read and study the COVID section of the Final Call newspaper. Please remember, brothers and sisters, if you are interested in obtaining guidance, you don't have to be a registered member of the Nation of Islam, but if you are interested in receiving guidance from a man who in our presence has now demonstrated his connection to a divine power, even if you just heard him for the first time, February 24th, 2020, the unraveling of a great nation, and you watched what took place 2 weeks later, he's someone I would want to turn to for guidance in this hour if I were not already a student and follower of his. But I want to stress that watch him and follow him carefully in what he publishes in the Final Call newspaper and what he shares with us through his executive council what he says to us in his lectures. The coronavirus that they called COVID-19, and you notice he just referred to it Savior's Day as a pathogen. And I think that's a word you might want to look up. He didn't use the term COVID-19. He said the pathogen. Prior to that, he used the term coronavirus when he spoke to the Nubian leadership circle. That which they call COVID-19 is a member of the coronavirus family, the same virus that produces the common cold. It's a respiratory illness, but it's an ever-present virus. A pathogen is simply, it's a germ with the potential to infect. And what Minister Farrakhan is guiding us to do is, yes, we should be aware of pathogens that are in the air, bacteria as well as viral, but we should not be obsessed and fixated on it. By nature, we don't worry about contracting something. If we're in our nature and if we're following Islam and the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, then what we're focused on is his dietary regimen and the way of life he has prescribed that is designed not to be reactive to what's coming at us, but to be proactive. And so if we will recall, the minister lifted the Amish people during Savior's Day. You will notice he had us sitting side by side in the mosque.
That's right.
We were still wearing the mask. And, of course, on that day, that was the day before the mask policy changed. We don't follow white people in the sense that some of the less attentive among us may think, and we'll talk about that more some other time. But remember that obedience comes first and understanding follows later. But we don't,
that's right,
we just don't want to get stuck in a time warp and you know, continually sound the alarm about something when we need to move forward and focus more on the back page of the Final Call newspaper, what the Muslims want, what the Muslims believe. He has said to us many times in the among the laborers of council, and it's in the newspaper, you know, he doesn't want fear moving among us. He doesn't want us doing things as a result of being afraid of something. And unfortunately, the enemy has created a set of practices and a form of behavior over the past 2 years that for many it may take time to return to your true self. And I'm just saying that generally speaking, that's not targeting anyone or any group or anything. I'm just talking to the listeners in general and asking you to please read this newspaper, because this newspaper, the Final Call, specifically the articles by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Minister Louis Farrakhan, Brother Jibril Muhammad, Mother Tynetta Muhammad, and the COVID section of the Final Call newspaper, they're reflective of the mind of the publisher. And just as a reminder, if we turn our attention to the opening of the paper, this paper was founded, and it should say published, because he didn't just found the paper, he publishes this paper. He's not dead or gone. You know, he's
That's
alive
right. Come
and
on.
Well.
That's right.
There are these, you know, these suggestions and intimations that somehow he's not aware of things, and things are being done and said and published that he didn't approve of or knows about. You better be
Say that again.
Careful.
Come on.
Be real
Come on.
Careful with that. I'm just putting that out there, you know, in the airwaves. Be very, very careful. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, think five times before you speak. We have a right to our opinion, but when the Nation of Islam takes a position or stands on a platform, if you have a problem with our platform or position, and yet you say you are part of our circle, you should just keep that to yourself until understanding comes, and
That's
not
right.
try to dissuade people from where the man they came to follow is taking them. So with that being said, praise be to Allah. I am going to turn to, oh, yes, sir.
No. I was just laughing because I was like, you just dropped, like, that was like a mic drop and just like left it hanging there and then you moved on. I was like, okay, I'm just shut my mouth and let you keep on. I was just stuck on that point. You just dropped a serious mic.
Yes, praise be to Allah. But I know you and Sister Pamela have a exciting program for us tonight. We got some exciting guests and I can't wait to get to that. But to segue into it, our dear sister attorney Pamela Muhammad, who hosts A Time for Justice each and every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Central, 8 Eastern, on this network, Elevated Places. Her programs are excellent, but she had the bomb on this past Tuesday. And she also takes time every Thursday to take part in Elevated Places Thursday night edition with a contribution. And I'm so glad, Brother Terrence, you opened it up. All of us should be at least aware that the first black woman, potentially the first black woman to sit on the U.S. Supreme Court, if confirmed, has been undergoing the hearing process, the nomination process before the committee in the Senate. And it has, as Brother Terry says, you pointed out, it has been just, I don't have a word, I don't have any words for it.
Right.
I guess that phrase, our parents use, shocked but not surprised.
There you go.
The behavior of, you know what I'm saying, the behavior of white America should never be surprising to us, but it remains shocking to a people who are refined and civilized still find the behavior to be shocking and appalling.
That's right.
We certainly want to get our sister's take. Sister Attorney Pamela, on what she has observed, and then Brother Terrence, you and Sister Attorney want to take us into the main phase of tonight's program. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Pamela.
Wa alaikum salam, Sister Minister Ava Muhammad, and Brother Terrence. I would say, Sister Ava, all praises are due to Allah. Thank you so much for your kind words about our show and about our efforts to contribute to your wonderful Elevated Places network and be a part of your team. It's so such a humbling experience. Yes, ma'am.
Yes,
so I wanted to, as you were saying with the Ketanji Brown Jackson, I will say Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson's confirmation hearings. I did get a chance to watch some of it, and I have just been just appalled, mesmerized, and really sometimes just sickened by the racist attacks against this woman who is more qualified than perhaps any other Supreme Court nominee that they've had before them. And the types of attacks, like Brother Terrence said, they're so demeaning. You know, things like I watched Senator Blackburn, the white female, and one of the things she accused Judge Jackson of is being compassionate. Because during the coronavirus, when the pandemic and the shutdowns and people were really in prison, especially having issues, there was a situation or a system called compassionate release. And so they targeted and tried to criticize Judge Brown Jackson for considering releasing someone, for considering to be compassionate. You know, when they tried to look at her words and her opinion where yes. she said, I wish that I could let the person out, this Senator Blackburn attacked her. After the judge corrected, she said, I wish I could have let him out, but I didn't let him out. And the senator attacked her, said, well, you shouldn't even be, you know, thinking about how could you even think about letting this person out and, you know, being compassionate. I mean, we heard things mm-hmm. such as this whole tough-on-crime rhetoric where they're trying to accuse her of being soft and being, caring about justice. She made a prior statement that she made about the criminal justice system being unfair and unjust, and they want to attack her about that. You know, and under the guise, you know, these senators are attacking her, talking about they're trying to protect our children, which is so hypocritical when we know that they don't yeah. care about our children, especially black children. You know, they and even their own many times, you know, so these exaggerated clauses such as violent crimes and she's tough on crimes. I mean, this is that same Willie Horton, you know, all of that rhetoric that they use to demonize black people, you know, and even with the issue, it's like a poll tax, Sister Ava, where, you know, Sister Dr. Ava, where back during the Jim Crow era, you know, the black codes, in order for a black person to vote, you had to show that you could, you know, read and backwards almost. You know, you could stand on your head and read. You just had to be the smartest person and meet these almost impossible standards. So they're having her quote back to them laws, you know, like, do you know the law? You know, you know, A to Z, and she'll, you know, politely just repeat the law where there hasn't been a showing that they even know these laws. And this is just absurd. And just in closing, I want to talk about this whole critical race theory issue. And it's really sad because yeah. we know that critical race theory, this is what they're trying to call it. I often say, go back to the lectures you made, Sister Dr. Ava, where you talk about them rewriting history, white people trying to rewrite history and erase slavery, because really critical race theory, and from my perception, is really just the effects of chattel slavery, Jim Crow laws, systemic racism, the economic impact that black people are suffering from in these communities, and you know, and just the whole going back to the responsibility and where it lies, which is with the founding fathers and every other industrial person. But anyway, you know, they want to invalidate that theory, and they want to they want to invalidate our history and our rights. And so they're attacking her because if she showed any type of you know, understanding or agreements or any type of nodding her head toward it, you know, they're just really trying to drag her through the mud as they demonize black people. And so, you know, it's really been amazing to see. And, you know, they've thrown everything at her from crack, abortion, crime, pornography, all of this. And it has a lot to do with the fact that she's been a hardworking woman who had a job. And so there's a lot of information that they are just using to attack her. And it's just been, you know, for no reason, wrongful targeting. So that's showing us, Sister Ava, that these people are not they're not fair, and racism is alive and well in America. So yes, man, that's what I saw. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the den of vipers.
Yes, ma'am.
And all of this storming out, walking out, you know, they're just snakes lurking in the dark. And as has been said in some of the media outlets, and it's just an example of what we live with 100% of the time as Black people in America, we have to be superior, far superior, in credentials and qualifications to get the same position that a white person of far lesser status, no qualifications,
right,
would get. And this was no exception. You know, here is Ketanji Brown Jackson, like Thurgood Marshall, has a rich background in the law, exposure to the judicial process, and in her case, if she's confirmed, there's no one sitting on the Supreme Court right now whose credentials equal hers.
Right. Yes, ma'am.
You know, one of the sitting justices has a drinking problem. Okay? You know, I remember Trump tried to put a man on the Supreme Court who didn't even have a knowledge of the law equivalent to somebody in the eighth grade. That just took a course in you know, the eighth grade history and government, your initial introduction to it. Here is a woman that has clerked for a Supreme Court justice. She's been a public defender. She's been on the Sentencing Commission. She's been a U.S. District Court judge and a U.S. Court of Appeals judge. So if you were writing an ideal concept of an ideal set of qualifications for U.S. Supreme Court, it would be hers.
That's right.
And this is all they could come up with. You gave a light, what they call light sentence. And yet every day they let murderers of Black people walk out of courtrooms.
That's
murderers,
right,
of Black children.
Come on.
Black babies,
that's right.
Black men, Black women walk out. You want to talk about sentencing and child pornography? Why is child pornography dominant in your nation? Why is sex trafficking so dominant? Why is the internet such a dark, degenerate place? How dare you? You kidnapped children off the west coast of Africa and brought them naked in chains to a land that you just stole from its original owners. And you've had us here for almost a half a millennium, more than four and a half centuries, and you're going to question a descendant of that people that survived your bestial wickedness? I mean, it just never ceases. And this is why point number four of what the Muslims want just continually is reconfirmed. That's what's confirmed. That's the confirmation.
That's right. That's right.
Yes.
That point number four, separation is the best and only solution. But Allah willing, she will be confirmed. And this is just the God driving them to the brink of insanity or beyond that. Because, you know, I was telling Sister Pamela, this man walking out, you know, what it is, you are so offended. You're so envious. You're so jealous. You're so contemptuous to see this brown-skinned woman about to take a seat on the highest court of your unraveling nation. That's what's driving you crazy. You don't care about her. She didn't make any irrational decisions as a judge. And then to ask her, do you think all white people should go back to Europe? Do you think we should go back to Africa? You have a lot of nerve.
That's right.
Ask me. Because as a student of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, I'll tell you. It ain't even about what I think. I'll tell you what God has ordained. When all of this is said and done, the only place you will be allowed to live on this planet will be in Europe.
Come on.
So put that in your book. But anyway, I'm back out there on that soapbox. We need to get to the main program, and I'm going to turn this mic back over to you and Sister Pamela, Brother Terrence, Sister Pamela, to introduce our guest and this fabulous discussion.
And before Sister Pamela introduce our guest, I just wanted to just really acknowledge and note the words that you shared. I didn't want to really gloss, and what I mean by that is that you are, you know, everybody paid attention to what you said, that we have to be up to date on the words of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and up to date on the guidance that he is giving, whether it be from his words or through the executive council that he put in place, is very key, because we want to be, and we don't want to fall asleep and say, well, back in prior to 75, we used to do this. Or in the 80s, we used to do this. We are moving, and I'm saying that now because the teachings never change, and the minister doesn't change his directions, but the minister continues to grow us into understanding about different things, and I'm glad that you laid out that we need to study all of that that is approved and comes from the minister. It's not like some other folks are doing something over here and Zach and I don't, and the minister don't know. No. Minister knows about all of this. So the guidance that we get through the final call, the executive council and the minister, we should be following, and that keeps us in line to what we should be doing. And I just thank you, because sometimes we may be talking in the past, but there are some new present things that we should be paying attention to. So I just want to appreciate that clarity, not only for the callers, but myself, to be very clear on our direction, because we all need a gentle reminder, wake up, so we don't fall asleep into some things that we don't need to fall asleep to. Yes, ma'am. And Sister Pam, can you bring on part three? Part three. They didn't even know they're going to do part three from A Time for Justice.
All right, all right. Okay. Well, yes, sir, Brother Terrence, as we talk tonight, we're going to do part three, and it's entitled Music and Social Justice Movements, Hidden Control. And it actually kind of rolls out of some, we had some entertainment lawyers on A Time for Justice a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about movements and social justice movements and how, you know, there were independent artists and labels, Curtis Mayfield, you know, those type of people, staple singers, and how the influence, the impact of positive music. And it really came from the swan song in the statements for me that the minister had made when he talked, and I'm going to quote the minister. He said, I offered this man, Elijah Muhammad, my life. My songs were transformed from a nasty calypso or a stupid ballad into songs of the cause that bring about resurrection. And he, you know, that was, those were the words. And we, you know, and he also talked about not taking money for the masters and how he could use his music to resurrect people. And that was his choice. And so from that, it just kind of made me think about music of the past and why today's music is it having that same impact. And so tonight, Brother Terrence so graciously joined us on Tuesday in our discussion of music and social justice movements, And so tonight we're bringing on the brothers that spoke as well as Brother Terrence, and we're talking about control, hidden control. So we got two wonderful guests, as Sister Ava has said. We have Brother Anton Muhammad, and I want to introduce Mr. Muhammad, Brother Anton, and he's the president and the CEO of RHN, the Real Hip Hop Network, the first 24/7 TV channel geared toward real hip hop lifestyle and culture. Mr. Muhammad is a seasoned entrepreneur with strong influence in the television and music industry. And there's a lot more about Mr. Brother Anton, but I think, you know, opening up his mic and giving him an opportunity to talk more about himself, you know, that would be wonderful. So, Brother Anton. And then the next person we have is Brother Attorney Warren Muhammad. And Brother Attorney Warren is an attorney, and he has maintained an extensive practice in the field of entertainment of law, and has in the past served as the attorney for the original members of Destiny Child, Latoya Luckett, Lantavia Robertson. And he's, you know, Mr. Muhammad, he actually has sued and been a litigant in this field, and he knows a lot about the field of entertainment law as well. So both of them are the guests, and I guess their mics are open.
Thank you, Sister Pamela, for that introduction. This is Brother Eitan Muhammad, President and CEO of the Real Hip Hop Network. I want to, first of all, thank Sister Ava for allowing us to be on this platform. Sister Django, as she's also known, she is, you know, an amazing helper. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and she's somebody who we love and respect. You know, my mom, my brother, my sister, and I, every time Sister Ava speaks in Chicago, we make it a big day. Everybody cancels everything they're doing. They gather around the TV to watch us speak, you know, because he delivers like none other, and we're so proud to be able to have such a powerful representation of Black womanhood representing our nation. And I just wanted to take the time to thank Sister for all her work and being able to fight for our people, you know, on the front lines with our minister. And as thank the CEO you. Of the Real Hip Hop Network, I wanted to be able to also give honor and thanks to Minister Louis Farrakhan, because he means so much to so many, and he's been a personal inspiration to myself, and has, you know, basically been one of our greatest assets as a leader in Black America, and we thank Allah for him. And even though I have not been blessed to know Minister Farrakhan personally the way I would like, I did get a chance to meet him once. I just so happened to have, as co-founders of the network, Minister Farrakhan's powerful F team and his captains that, you know, have inspired me, mentored me, and have been a major, major, you know, source of inspiration and also mentorship. And I'm speaking about folks like Brother Curtis Muhammad, Brother Akil Muhammad, Brother Khalil Muhammad, Brother Shaheed Muhammad. And these brothers, you know, have been my big brothers and helped us with the organization of the network, and have helped us through tough times, helped us with raising capital. And, you know, these brothers are the shoulders that we stand on, because they made personal sacrifice to travel to protect our leader. And, you know, we stand on their shoulders, because as the first regional captains and security for the minister in helping to build the nation, you know, we would not have a nation to be able to appreciate and accept had these brothers not stood up to help the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And I thank Allah for them. For all that they have done for the myself personally and for the nation in particular. And, you know, they stand with me in being able to, you know, build an independent outlet for media and music so that we can be able to find who we are as black people to the rest of the world against our enemies' control and execution of dominance over forms that we create and our images. We want to be able to make certain that we let the world know that Real Hip Hop Networks stands for freedom, justice, equality, and balance, you know, not just in the world of hip hop, but in the ability for us to be able to transmit our ideas and to redefine how we're perceived in the world by our own hands. So thank you for giving us the opportunity to be able to represent our ideas, and I look forward to this powerful program. Sister Pamela, you know, had the mic fired up last time. We really, really, you know, I really enjoyed my time being able to share this knowledge. This is a very important topic, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
Well, all praises are due to Allah. Brother Warren.
As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam, Brother Warren. How are you,
sir?
I'm fine by Allah's grace. And celebrating my only daughter's birthday today, but I told him, look, I got an interview appearance on this radio show, and I can't miss it. But I'm happy and honored to be again on this platform. And thank you again, Sister Ava and Sister Pamela, for inviting me.
You should.
And I just want to say, in terms of my background, sometimes people comment on the different things that I've been involved in, which kind of seem to have no sense of direction to it. It might be entertainment, or it might be business, or wrong for death, or, you know, medical malpractice. But I look back on my life, and I can remember being a young teenager and involved in what today would be called a gang. We didn't call it a gang back then. But I always found myself taken up for and being a voice for the weaker guys in the group who were afraid to speak up and stand at the ground. So I think I was just, it's part of my nature, and I was born to just be an advocate and to try to be an advocate for the right position, or the position of justice, of freedom, justice, and equality. So that's kind of defined my life and my career, and that's why I've been, I guess, so eclectic, kind of all over the place, because if there's an issue, if there's a cause of justice involved, or you know, freedom, justice, and equality, I find myself willing to take up the fight. And so that's what has brings me here. And again, thank you for this opportunity. I look forward to the discussion.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you, Brother Warren. So to get right into it, you know, we know that there's a systematic design of the enemy to keep black people in a condition of murder, genocide, slavery. And we, you know, stumbled upon whether or not how the industry works. And does the industry, the entertainment industry, we talk about music, we talk about film, does it have anything to do with black people staying or being impacted negatively? Because when we look at social movements, we talked about some of the civil rights movements in the past, you know, and voting and different things. We talk about the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and how his music, A White Man's Heaven, impacted Ali, Muhammad Ali. You know, he heard that song and he was able to quote the lyrics when Brother Rahman approached him. He knew some of the lyrics, and those things had awoken him and resurrected him. But today, what's going on? So we kind of wanted to talk about how the industry works. Is it controlled by who? We've heard some people say slavery. And I just want to throw this out here before I pass the mic. In an article called Cultural Warriors, Messages in Music, Songs, Dance, and Acting to Revive People, and that was in the Final Call, I think, in 2019. It talks about the industry, largest industry. The market is one-third. Let's see, the U.S. music and entertainment market, one-third of the largest global industry, largest music and entertainment market worldwide. is expected to reach $771 billion in income in 2019. And then it talks about how the U.S. recorded music industry, that income was about $15.5 billion, and that was in that same year, I think it was 2019. And so, you know, the point is it's a lot of money involved. And so my question is, how does this industry work? Is it controlled by who? And that's what we're talking about tonight. Right, Brother Terrence? And please just go ahead and jump in, Brother Terrence, because he definitely knows a lot.
So I'm going to let you let the flow go. But, yeah, we can get into that first.
Brother Terrence, I wanted to jump in on that just to kind of teed it all up about who controls what and how. Let's be clear about who controls it. You know, we all know that the small hats, you know, our enemies from the Zionist community, you know, who basically control, you know, most of the major media outlets around the world. They not only dominate hip-hop, but they dominate social media, they dominate tech culture, and they exercise a great amount of control and influence over the financial systems of the world. And when we look at how to be able to, first and foremost, deal with the level of control, we need to be able to begin to at least think about the areas where our influence needs to be capitalized on so that we may be able to use the influence that we do have to be able to create independent institutions, independent platforms that we own, that we operate, that we control, so that we can be able to get out of the hands of our enemy and work towards being able to execute a strategy where we can leverage our influence to be able to gain political and financial control over ourselves, over our art form, and over our own images that are projected all around the world. And there are new technologies that are arising that are decentralizing the levels of control, things like the metaverse, things like digital currency, things that now have really began to start democratizing how we can be able to leverage and monetize the art that we create. We need to be able to discuss in greater detail how we leverage those situations so that we can be able to begin to take control over our own destinies, and everything is for sale. At some point, begin to look at the opportunities to be able to buy out control from the enemy with their major record corporations and leverage our financial strength and buying power as the black community. And Islamically, we have resources overseas with our Arab brothers who have countless billions of dollars. As a matter of fact, the company Mubadala, which is a company that is a sovereign wealth fund for one of the UAE Emirates, they have over $900 billion in managed assets. And they have a great deal of respect and love for hip-hop and urban culture, as do the Chinese. You know, the L.A. Times did a story declaring hip-hop as one of China's biggest art forms, amassing over 2.7 billion views online and being noted as one of China's most streamed music genres. So media is warfare. How we control media, how we use media to be able to influence the world about doing business with us, you know, is one of the most important things we need to be able to accomplish in order for us to be able to break free from the chains of this world. Because as the messenger talked about, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, The final battle of Armageddon is the battle for a battle in the sky, the battle for the minds of the people. And media is not only warfare, it is influence. Influence of how we think, which ultimately is influence over how we live. So if we leave that in the hands of our enemies, we leave ourselves at their disposal to be able to paint us how they see fit. And that that propaganda endangers our lives because they paint our women as being whores. They paint our men as being hustlers, pimps, thugs, and criminals. And every time we walk in the street and there's crimes inflicted upon us, there is no sympathy because we had an enemy paint us in his image and his likeness instead of God.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I would like to kind of chime in on what Brother Anton has so eloquently stated. And when we look at control, the Minister Farrakhan gave a lecture once called, and he talked about dumb devils and wise Satan.
Right.
And many of the people that we interact with on a day-to-day basis in these industries and in these genres are really dumb devils. They're being controlled by wise Satan. And the wise Satan are these multinational corporations and companies and families that sit at the top of this pyramidal structure that has its fingers in everything. If you recall, Mr. Farquhar talked about a conversation he had with a gentleman who told him that there was a small group of them that met every year, and they decided which direction culture would take, which direction fashion would take, which direction music would take. And then based on that meeting and consensus that they arrived at, then they put their dumb devils to work to influence and direct those things in the direction that they've already decided on. Now, I've had the opportunity to look in, to take a peek inside some of these structures because I've actually been involved in litigation with Sony. I've been involved in litigation with Viacom, Radio One, and was able. That's why I was really able to see that there are these layers upon layers upon layers that get to the top of corporations that control and have an interest not only in music but in practically every aspect of life. And you can see the reason for certain theaters of war taking place. And I'll close with this. On this point, when we look at Vivendi, which is a Paris-based company that owns Universal, which is the largest record company, a music company in the world, Vivendi owns not only music, but it has publishing, fashion, you know, all of the arts. But I was surprised to find out that it was involved also in environment. And it had a segment of its company called Vivendi Environmental and Vivendi Water, which is now Veolia Water, which is the largest supplier of water in the world. And I really couldn't understand why France was so aggressive in the war against Libya and our brother Gaddafi. And it just didn't make sense to me until I discovered their interest in water and then to find out that Libya, Chad, Sudan, and Egypt sit on top of the largest fossil or freshwater, groundwater table in the world. And those countries could have water forever if they have the ability to extract the water that sits on the ground upon which they stand. And the one person who was in the process of doing that was Gaddafi with his great man-made river project, which France and NATO bombed and destroyed and, of course, killed our brother. So I just said that to say we have to look vertically to see the different elements that are involved in our oppression and our control. And it, the music is the propaganda arm of it, but it's all, as Minister Farrakhan said, business and warfare. and they're waging war on us as a people in our society to hoist up white supremacy as they have created it. So I'll leave it there right here.
So let me jump in here because it's sad. It's really sad that the time is already just moving so fast on this show. And I just really want people to see if you've seen the flyer or you heard, and they'll give out their names again and later their information, because these two brothers, from what I've been hearing, are very, very versed in the music industry. And I'm just saying that for those that are artists, those that are trying to do something. They have given so much information on the Time for Justice show on Tuesday night with Sister Pamela that people need to know. And I didn't really know what angle, but Sister Pam set it up in this way because there was so much I wanted them to give just in the industry. But I wanted to kind of bring you into the conversation at some point, Sister Ava. But here's the conversation, because I know I'm looking at our time. So we know that the minister has talked about social engineering, you know, and at some point I want you to just kind of talk about what the minister was talking about when we talk about social engineering in the context of this discussion, because I would want to ask the brothers, you know, how much, because it, me being in the music industry, and I've sat on many panels, been on many panels with congressional caucus panels, local panels, radio panels, and it's just always this discussion about the artists, cleaning up their lyrics. Wish there is a component, an individual social component that we need to do, and we have seen different artists do that. But I wanted you all to speak, as the flyer says, the unseen, the hidden hand behind the music industry. There was a brother, Knife Wonder, a friend of mine, he said this years ago, almost 20-some years ago, he said he was meeting with some high-level record execs, and some white guy was like, what niggas listening to today? You know, like literally, you know, saying this kind of language in a room. Or I was with Russell Simmons, and there was someone had a whole, he had a box, like he was doing a meet and greet, and they was getting their CDs, getting their tapes, getting their CDs. Oh, and putting all that in the box. And I was saying to myself that Russell's not going to listen to none of those stuff. They're going to give it to some white exec who's going to go through the music and determine who's hot and who's not and who we're going to back and who we put on radio. And people don't even know when you get signed, that doesn't mean that you're going to get promoted or pushed or financially back. And I just wanted the brothers to kind of talk about that social engineering or that hidden hand in the music industry when we try to hold the artists on the small scale of this music industry accountable versus the labels are the backers that actually control this music industry, from radio, from record sales, to the whole gamut.
And, brother, thank you, Brother Terrence. I wanted to come in right quick because Brother Warren always is dropping amazing, amazing stuff. I love to hear Brother, you know, talk about, you know, some of his stories of how he faced, you know, this beast, you know, in the court. I have had direct experience with the unhidden hidden hand. I'm going to start with our brother, Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby and I met in Detroit in 2005, and he was interested in this brother whose last name was Atom Muhammad, and who, as we talked for almost 4 hours, he was, you know, very, very impressed, you know, with the teachings that we were talking about, you know, which, of course, you know, I got to give credit. If I'm taking credit from Minister Farrakhan for what I learned, then I'd be stealing. Give credit to who praise the due. You know, he and I talked about the need for black folks to control the images that are put out there. He talked about his issue when he attempted to purchase NBC and how, you know, that was, you know, a major, major controversy, and that he had upset some very powerful people with his request. Bill Cosby at that time told me, we were at, you know, Wayne County Community College, And this was just before, you know, any news broke out about the Andrea Konstak allegation. Bill Cosby said that he was going to come on the board of Real Hip Hop Network and support me financially to be able to launch the channel, that he said that hip-hop was the way that what we would be able to do it. Now, the interesting part about it is the Detroit Free Press was there. We were being broadcasted live on public television and on radio. The mayor at that time, Kwame Kilpatrick, was present. He was supposed to introduce Bill Cosby. He was so impressed with, you know, what we discussed and our intent to be able to use the power of hip-hop to be able to redefine how the enemy had used hip-hop to weaponize against our people, and that we would use it to be able to instill a source of consciousness, you know, and positivity. And he said that that is exactly what we need to be able to do to, you know, galvanize young people. He asked me to open up for him. Now, this, you know, incident was recorded by the Washington Post. Kevin Meredith, who's now the, you know, style editor for the Washington Post, wrote an article called Cause and Effect, COSEFFECT. And Bill Cosby, after speaking with me for 4 hours, asked me to open up for him. And, you know, I opened up for Bill Cosby. The mayor, who was supposed to open up for him, was upset. But Bill Cosby said, no, let this brother open up for me. And Bill Cosby got in and spoke about how the nation was a great example of how we go out and touch our people and how Christians need to take responsibility like the nation does, to not be scared of our young people but reach our young people. And automatically everybody looked back at me, you know, Muhammad, who brought him on, thinking that maybe somehow I had an influence. You know, and that was, you know, I said, oh, my God, when everybody on the panel, and he had Judge Glenn the Hatchet there, Robert Townsend was there, and a lot of high-profile Negroes were on the panel, you know, and they all looked back and say, I never heard Cosby actively talk about supporting the Nation of Islam, okay? Now, that was the last time I had spoken to Cosby after that day. When that article came out, the following day when I reached out to Cosby, I was told, and I asked for a copy of the tape. I mean, how often do you open for Bill Cosby? Right, and they told me that they burned the tape. They burned the tape. Okay, that they wasn't going to let it be seen or heard again. Detroit Public Television would not issue any copies of the tape. And the Andrea Konstak allegation came out that following day. Now, that let me know that we have eyes, ears, and agents in every room where major discussions are being said. And at the time, you know, I was on CNN. I had been on BET, you know, so the enemy was familiar with Real Hip Hop Network, and they began to start actively moving to be able to keep money outside of my hands. I was invited in 2007 by Bobby Rush to speak to the imams in the industry when he was calling sisters nappy-headed whores. There was a panel that Bobby Rush implemented. I was invited, and there they were going to put the CEOs of the top major media companies, Philip Domon from Viacom, who was the president of Viacom at that time, Doug Morris, who was the president of Universal Music Group, and also Edgar Brofman, who was the CEO of that company, Vivendi Universal, and Warner Music Group, you know. And Master P was there, as well as David Banner. I was supposed to be on the CEO panel. Bobby Rush told me that when he called and told them that Atom Muhammad was going to be on the panel, that they told him that if they allowed me to sit next to them, they weren't going to be showed up, that they would have to send U.S. Marshals to be able to come get them. And I got the receipts. I kept the emails.
Wow.
They said that if you allow him to speak, then we are going to not show up and we're going to boycott Congress. And you would have to arrest us to get us to show up. Now, when I came in, you know, they had David Banner talking, and at that time, Deborah Lee was sitting right in front of him, okay, and this Negro, you know, you can tell all these people who they put in front of us pretending to be leaders, you know, you knew who they were in the room because their masters were at the table, and they were in the crowd. Bobby Rush did acknowledge me, and he told me, "Brother, I don't know what you said to scare these white folks." He said, "But I can't let you join the CEO panel or else they won't show up." He said, "I acknowledge you. I still extend my invitation, you know, but I can't let you be on the panel." So we're going to invite, they asked for Alfred Liggins from TV One and Radio One. Go figure. They wanted a Negro that better reflected them in my seat. And I understood that even as, you know, a student of Minister Louis Farrakhan, you know, that I would have to be able to deal with the enemies of my minister. You know, they became a minister, an enemy of me.
Mm.
You know?
Yes, sir. Wow.
So that experience taught me that I was flattered that my enemies even knew who I was, okay? And it let me know the importance at that point, you know, that we had our opportunity, that they saw the need for us to be able to own and control our media. And the whole purpose of that hearing was, does media affect, you know, the public? My written statement that was submitted into the congressional record was, we don't sell media, we sell influence. That's why a Super Bowl commercial costs $3.5 million for 30 seconds, because people believe and know that to put something on the airwaves, people see and they believe what they experience. That's the reason why they are so careful to block the minister on all the platforms, the swan song. Everybody know the Beast was busy. And if Real Hip Hop Network had gotten the financial support from our people, we would have been able to distribute the swan song on our own platform instead of the platforms of our enemy that they constantly block our word out. You know, we have the skill within the nation to be able to reach the entire planet. All of the brothers here, you know, we have an opportunity to be able to reach a satellite in Africa to reach 1.2 billion people, okay? And also an opportunity to be on every major platform with Real Hip Hop Network here. But what we need to do is galvanize the support of the leadership in the nation and also the brothers and sisters here. Because, look, the Lost and Found, the Lost and Found rappers, and the other folks, they counting on us to stand up. We can't wait for these brothers to make the decisions for us. Mm-hmm. You know, Jay-Z and Diddy and them, they don't have knowledge of stuff. We do. And our God gave us the guidance to be able to provide for them. And we got to take our rightful place to be able to make that happen.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to take the conversation back because in our first segment, we talked about how once upon a time black people owned more of their music. We were able to influence our people. The artists owned and wrote their own songs. So can we talk too about how did this control of our community, our music, our voice, how did that even happen? You know, because I think it goes toward, you know, a model for the unity that y'all are talking about that needs to happen in order for us to take back the control and take back our ability to impact our children and our community with music and entertainment. Does anybody want to add anything on that?
And after this is finished, we want to make sure we give some time for the callers.
Oh, yes, sir. I'm sorry. Yes, sir.
Why don't you share some of your insights on this, brother. Because I think folks need to hear, you know, from you on, you know, how this industry works and let them understand the experience of some of the things in the past.
Yeah. I don't know if Brother Warren is his mic.
What is?
But, you know, there was a comment.
I was on mute. I apologize.
Okay.
I was on mute. Okay, and I'll be brief. I would have a difference of opinion as to what we owned, because in fact, the industry has always been owned by our enemies. Even back in the day, we didn't own our masters, we didn't own our publishing. When our artists signed to those record labels, there went all of the ownership. So, and the proof of it is when the hip-hop generation started sampling music, and then they finally started forcing them to pay royalties on samples, most of that money did not go to the artist who recorded the music. It went to the publisher who owned the publishing rights. And it went to the label that owned the masters and the mechanical rights on it. So it's always been the problem is once we signed with record labels, the ownership went right along with it, and not only the ownership of the music, but also the ownership of the name and the likeness and the image and all of it. So probably all that we owned was what we said in our children's circuit and sang and performed live. But once we entered into those contracts, there went the ownership.
Right. But let me just respond, because I think that the contracts and the record label, like there were areas like Brownsville, I think, in Chicago, where, you know, you had Staple Singers, you had other labels, and if they were producing, if the ownership was by small black radio owners, record label owners, they could better control the content. The minister is saying in this article, and you mentioned this, Brother Warren, about how when we had the minister is saying we came to educate our people through rap. That's why we loved Public Enemy, KRS-One, Big Daddy Kane, and all those teachers. But the enemy, when he saw that we were independent teaching, he signed us to record labels. And then he said, and once you get signed to the record label, now you have an A&R man. You know, and that's the trap. So some of that, I think, is also an issue here.
Absolutely. You're probably going to be a smaller situation by being independent, but what we learned back in the days of those independents that you didn't have to sell 5 million records to show a profit. You could sell 200,000. Master P was dealing out of his trunk doing cassettes and CDs.
Right.
He didn't need to sell 1 million. He could sell 10,000 and show a handsome profit. But my point was once they began to mainstream the culture into the major record labels, that was the vehicle that they took over ownership and control. That was the point I was trying to make.
Yes, sir. And my last comment, in all fairness to the Elevated Places audience, our brother Louis Ali brought up the question on our first show, did integration have any impact on how the music became, you know, more out of our control? So that's also where we kind of got that direction. Yes. So.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead and make the comment. Yes, sir, go ahead.
I just wanted to make one brief comment. There's an organization called There's an organization called BESLA, which is Black Entertainment and Sports Lawyers Association. And I wasn't a founder, but I was part of the original group of attorneys that joined it back in 1979. And it's a wonderful organization. That's why I did my networking and learned the business. But at one point, I finally made it onto the board of directors of the organization. And by then, most of the funds of the organization were by corporate sponsors of record labels. And so I started pushing for an independent wing to represent the independent labels and independent publishers. And, of course, pushing for us to extend an invitation for the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan to attend and be a keynote speaker. And the following year, I was voted off the board. So that's my experience dealing with those. As Brother Anton said, those Negroes is in the room, you know.
They always in the room, Brother Warren. They always in the room.
Always. Well, Sister Ava, I didn't know if you wanted to jump in, have any comments before we hit the phones.
No, I'm just taking notes. You know, I hope to speak at some point with Brother Anton about the Real Hip Hop Network platform, because I'm in full agreement. We're in desperate need of independent platforms for all of the messages, both the Word of God, music, everything that we can think of. But we have to pull away from this reliance on the enemy. And can you blame them? Are you going to just let somebody come in your house and expose you?
No.
I think that's the thing that you just said, Dr. Ava. Would you allow anyone not only to come in your house and expose you, will you come in someone else, or someone else allow you to come in their house to take what they have established? And the way that they make their money off of us, because they are not creating anything.
Yeah,
we're creating everything.
Right.
Yeah, so we're creating the culture. We're creating the avenues. We have the creativity. And even to the point that the brothers can even elaborate is that, you know, at one point, not only the publishing, you know, but brothers used to get money from going to tours, and then they reinvented the contract, the 360 contract, and they're getting part of your tours, part of your merchandise, part of whatever you do. And some people want that upfront money and sell over everything that they have because they think they need this big, big label to make it. As you said, Master P started with doing it out of his trunk. It's just that we have this idea that going across the board, we would get more. And there's a lot of artists that have gone major label and then left the labels and try to get out of their contracts to go back independent, to have more creative control and ownership of their creativity and their craft. So ownership is the thing and the way we should go.
I remember, too, very briefly, that I had David Banner on my program when I was on WVON, and he talked about the fact that even the concept decades ago of the there's thievery across the board of artists by the companies, but he talked about even focusing our attention on concepts like the million, you've gone platinum, you've gone gold. Okay, and so now you can be wealthy. You're making money now because you're platinum. But as Brother Warren just pointed out, you don't need to sell a million units of something. And David Banner talked about that as well. If you're controlling your own product, you don't need the volume. But if you're making 3 cents the record, you have to sell 5 million to get a car, to buy an automobile.
That's right.
And it's what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad talks about, comparing us to Lazarus, laying up on the floor by the dinner table waiting for crumbs to fall off on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we can go to the phones if you all are ready.
Yes, ma'am. I want your caller to be upset. We got about 30 minutes left in the show, a little bit over 30.
Okay. Yes, sir. We're going to start with Brother Darryl at the top. Assalamu alaikum, sir, Brother Daryl.
Oh, wa alaikum salam, family. Happy Savior's Day. It's good to be on your show, Sister Ava. Really enjoy the show every time I go on. Every time I go on, it's just like Savior's Day all over again with the family and our audience. The question when our brother was speaking on, and Sister Pamela and you all, it is a shame, but that's how I set up. Like you said, you're going into their house, and they are publishing and taking everything from the artists. And like the minister said, our artists want to get their names in lights, but they're not looking at the royalties, all of that, like he mentioned about Tupac. Where's that money going since he's going? His family not benefiting from it. It's the enemy. So they are taking everything they need off the top. They'll put your name in lights, make you a star, but where your money going when something happened to you? And a good example, when Michaels bought the rights of Little Richard and gave it to him, didn't charge him. They was upset with that. But look at all of the money they're making off of our artists. You could go on right now and pull up anything of our artists that have passed. Who's getting that money? Not the family. Their family's not getting that. It's the enemy getting it. So our best solution is to go ahead and get away from these people, separate from them quick, because you can't win, you know. And like you said, the only best solution is to separate from them, because there's no way out dealing with this white man. So we have to come together, continue to do what we need to do to make this thing happen. And one more thing about the minister's song, I really enjoy The White Man's Heaven is a Black Man's Hell. Is there any way that song, I know we could hear it every now and then, they'll play it on the radio, but is there any way we could get that out so our young rappers could really hear it? Because that's why they didn't want their record out, because they wanted to offer over $250,000. And the messenger asked the minister, he said no, because he knew once they would have got that, they would have put it on the shelf and never would have got out. So what can we do to push that, like our young artists are doing with their music, pushing it out? How can we push that particular album or record out of the minister that we could get it out here to our people?
Stream it on Real Hip Hop Network.
Okay, praise
that's
you for
what
a
we
lot.
Can do.
Because, okay, well, that's what we need to do, because, like I said, I'm not up on all of how they're doing all of this. I just know it's a beautiful song, and it need to be heard global. And if we could do that, those that can, praise be to Allah. Thank you all. Love you. Happy Savior's Day. As-salamu alaykum.
Alaykum salam. Thank you, brother.
Alaykum salam.
I wanted to comment a little bit. Brother had mentioned Tupac and his family. Afeni Shakur was an investor in the Real Hip Hop Network. May Allah be pleased with her. And her family was very closely associated with my family. And she had been a supporter of me personally since 1997, and she loved the minister. But when Tupac passed, they had a cabalion of Jewish attorneys who descended upon Sister. And, you know, when we had requests for use of Tupac's music, we were, you know, generally had the door slammed in our face, you know. And the name of the woman who did it, her name was Dina LaPope. We're naming names.
Okay.
And I used to tell her nephews, you know, Kendrick Lassane, who he's the nephew of Afeni, you know, he would say, well, Faye is controlling everything. But I said, okay, well, the song that you said you wanted to get cleared for the channel, let's go to Faye to be able to get it done. We will always refer to Miss LaPope, who would refuse us every time. And they make it very difficult when our people, you know, have them as the intercessors or the go-between. They really execute an inordinate amount of control. And there's very few brothers and sisters that have, you know, a Brother Warren to be able to speak up for them. And a lot of it is designed that way. So one of the key important situations that we need to establish is, you know, being able to get them out of our business as middle people, or we'll
yes.
never be free. You know,
that's right.
And we, with Real Hip Hop Network, we wanted not only to be able to develop, you know, a streaming platform for our video and TV content, a TV channel, a music streaming service, which is kind of the dominant,
platform now and how artists get paid and how they determine the revenue model for modern artists. We said we're going to deconstruct what Satan is doing and even be where he's going to be. You know, the metaverses now are where the new movement is coming. There's a movement I'm pretty certain some of you may have heard, NFTs. Snoop Dogg just purchased Death Row and will announce Death Row to be the first NFT record label. Now, what this does is basically allows, artists to be able to use a blockchain platform to be able to sell their products and services. And it allows us to use digital currency, and not traditional banks, a direct-to-consumer, a peer-to-peer strategy where the fans can finance the artists and their art and their projects. And it's been super incredibly successful. Kanye West just invented a service called Steam, the Steam Player, where he was able to deplatform from Apple Music and launches Donda album on this platform, because we need to be able to not only release our own materials, but for us to be able to have our own mechanisms, our own app stores. We have in development through our company, RealStar, a mobile platform, which we will be launching in our own app store within our mobile platforms, because Apple and Android dominate the system. And if you violate with these very, very small groups of powerful people, if you violate in words what they consider to be, a violation of their status quo, then they can remove you from this their platforms and destroy you. So we need to have our own mobile platforms. We have already begun, and we'll be launching that mobile platform very soon, and it'll be on smart TVs and mobile devices.
Wow.
And we'll be able to launch our own apps. Apple charges 30%. Revenue off of every app that's in the iPhone store, and they don't make anything. Our Chinese brother, is the ones who build the iPhones and all of the products. They just submit designs, and there's a service called OEM. The OEM is basically where you basically give them a design and you put your label on it, so we can have our own nation phone. We can have our own, we call it the Envision platform. Because without vision, the people perish. We're going to have a so-called Envision. So we can have our own phones that we talk on, buy what we make what we buy, and we will show the Negroes, what God looks like, okay? Because we're going to be able to do for self, and when the enemy strikes, because they will, okay? When they say, we're going to take you off of Apple, we're going to take you off of Google, we're going to take you off of the back-end platforms, and we're going to take you off the credit card processing. Well, we have our own blockchain financial peer-to-peer strategy. We don't need your credit card systems. We don't need your money. We don't need Apple or Android. We can be able to do for self, and there are new Chinese platforms that are emerging. And since iPhone, this company called Foxconn, they're the ones who build the services for iPhone. Guess what? Foxconn will take iPhone calls too, okay? And now with America striking up all this drama with Russia and Ukraine, they're beginning to create sanctions on people who support Russia. Guess what, iPhone lovers? Okay, there's going to be some problems with your digital devices because America is the Negro of the modern world. They don't make nothing, okay? They have moved all of their manufacturing expertise overseas. Now, if we want to be able to be powerful, we can take these relationships, like the companies that built the relationships, that built the factories in China. They're helping African brothers. There was a deal where Foxconn was supposed to get $14 billion during the Trump administration to build a factory here in the United States.
okay, why can't we tell Fox that we want to be able to build, to develop our own phones and hire our own people? They would be happy to invest if we can say we can get hip-hop artists to promote the phones. And we can show them what black people can do when we step out on God and on faith. That's what's wrong right now with us. A lot of our brothers and sisters had lost the way in the early days of the nation, where most of us worked for our nation. You know, we bought what we made and made what we bought, okay? And we're going to do it again with this. And with NFTs and with non-fungible tokens and with digital technology creating our own platforms, we won't just control the content, but we'll control the platform that the content is on. That's the new way.
Yeah. Profound. On time.
I would like to just just add when we talk about separation, Sister Ava, which I know is one of your major platforms, our people need to begin to realize how in depth that is. We have to, and I made this comment last night, we have to begin to build a whole world. So that means our young people who are in school need to be studying the physics, as the lessons tell us, all of the sciences of life, cryptography, which is on the part of the basis of blockchain. And I'm reading a book now called Blockchain Wars, The Future of Big Tech Monopolies and the Blockchain Internet. And as Brother Anton was alluding, there are movements to take the blockchain away from the control of the five major platforms, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, and Google, because as he said, if they don't agree with what you're saying, they'll pull the plug on you. But then I just did a little research. China has its own internet and its own satellites, and guess what? They won't let Google in because they're independent.
Right, yes.
You know,
that's what I like.
So this is the mindset. This is the mindset that we have to begin to adopt, is total independence, not just independence on a superficial, you know, a surface level, but building out the infrastructure of an entire world for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And I think that's where we're falling short. We have to be visionaries. We don't have to be the originator of the vision, but we have to adopt the complete vision. And you're right, Brother Warren, for pointing that out. Both of you, you know, that we have to look at the entire process, not just take a component of it, because that still remains an enslaved, subservient condition when someone can, on a whim, just shut you down because of your reliance on someone else for any significant component of the process. This has to be total independence. And we have to be willing to sacrifice something in order to attain that level of freedom and independence. You know, we're not out in the fields picking cotton from dark to dark. You know, our generation and the three or four generations present on the planet now, we have to be willing to step up and pay. You know, every generation has some part of the price to pay. And we've been very blessed, very blessed. So, you know, as Brother Anton is saying, and I know even in the 80s when I came in the nation, you walked away from what you were doing.
That's right.
You walked off the plantation. You don't say, well, I'm on the plantation all day, then I'll build a nation. You can't build a nation as an extracurricular activity.
That's right.
You know,
come on.
It's either do or die. But
yeah, let's
get in. let's get a couple of more of our callers, and let's go to Brother Khalil, who has a comment and a question. Assalamu alaikum.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. I want to say, first of all, I'm really enjoying the conversation. I think this is the third show, and I hope we can continue this. My question is, can elevated places or the members on this phone, the host, put together, can we put together a national database with the talent of all the honorable Muslims, Farrakhan's believers in this country? Because, you know, I've worked with the Real Hip Hop Network almost from its inception. Brother Anton blessed me with the opportunity to be a program director over the channel, and I really only knew how to just run a camera. But, you know, suffice that to say, I've run about 5 different television stations since then. And this kind of conversation is something that's needed. And I think if we could create a national database, keep this thing going, I was wondering if you all could do that. That's my question and comment. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
I want the brothers to go first, but I definitely want to input after they make that comment.
Yes, sir, please. Yes, sir.
I'm definitely in support of the national database. We have everything we need to be free within the nation, you know. And the messenger said one thing that I think we forget at times, that our unity is like an atomic bomb. You know, we have all of these different talented brothers. I don't care in what field that you're talking about in the new world. I had one brother in the nation talking to me, you know, about being able to, you know, have these new D-Wave device for using quantum computing. Okay, we have some of the greatest minds ever to exist in the nation, and the only thing that prevents us from being able to achieve Minister Farrakhan and Honorable Elijah Muhammad's vision is that we get together and put a cohesive plan for us to take over, okay? He didn't give us these teachings for us to be in service of Negroes or the dying world of our slave master's children. In order for the only reason why Satan still has a shot right now is because we haven't formulated the new world for our kingdom to exist. But we will. You know, the dominating factor that we need to understand is that our will is what brings the new world into existence, you know? And we are the best and the brightest. When Masrur Muhammad came, July 4th, 1930, he didn't come to be able to put together a nation of followers. He came to put together a nation of gods. You know, and that's how we began to start thinking. And we wherever we are, I was in traffic one day, and there was this big traffic jam, and all these cars were blocked, and there was no police to come out, and everybody was waiting for somebody to be able to take charge to try to clear the traffic jam. And I told my brother, take charge of this post and all temple property in view, brother. Let's do it. My brother went down.
That's the point.
The other. And we cleared the traffic. And even the white folks said, thank God. Okay, that's right. Thank God somebody took charge. Okay?
Yes.
We are living in these cities where all of these other Negro leaders who are bumbling and fumbling, you know, using 20th century solutions, jobs, and justice and marches.
Yes, sir.
Instead of the 21st century solution that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has given us already. We got the truth.
Yeah.
We just got to demonstrate it. And if we unify, we're going to take control.
Yes, sir, Brother Eitan. I think Brother Terrence and Brother Warren want to say something as well.
I'm sorry.
Yes, I want to add to Brother Khalil's question concerning the database. I think that's a great idea. We need someone who has that skill in operating databases to take charge of that. But I would like to add that in connection with assembling the database, We need to pull from that to have education and training, because we have to know how to accumulate capital. We can't do any of this without capital. And, of course, we have an enemy, so you can't just open up the phone line and tell people to start sending money in. You're going to find yourself with a federal indictment for money laundering and you know, use of, you know. So you have to be very, very aware of legal complexities. But there are ways to assemble through private placements that are exempt from securities regulations, and Anton is very familiar with this. And through a private placement, you can accumulate capital and form a number of corporate entities to do private fundraising through these private placements, and they're exempt from regulation or securities registration, to be more specific. So, but we need training and education on how to assemble capital, because our people are not poor. We maybe used to be poor, but we got people with money among us now.
That's right.
But it's like each rich person is still paddling their own canoe. But we need to learn how to bring these large sums of money, as brothers say, so we could fund our own Silicon Valley and put our scientists and cryptographers and computer scientists together in an environment where they don't have to go work on the plantation, and then come to build our nation. We can finance and pay people ourselves to do the heavy lifting and the work that needs to be done, but we've got to assemble capital.
Yeah. And so let me just say, everything that's just been said is good. And when that question was asked, my organizing hat just kind of got put on, and I laughed because I'm thinking about the work of it. Number one, usually, like when the analogy of being sitting in a car in traffic and you waiting for somebody to do something, you're the one that you're looking for. You know what I'm saying? So when you're looking for someone to do it, you're that person to make that happen. Because sometimes there are things that people want, but some folks, we're actually in this work, and we may not have time to stop to do that one thing. But I will say this. I know in our teaching, Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Message of the Black Man said, pool your resource, 8 to 10 people. So the reality is we want the national database, but really it's getting about 8 to 10 people to come together, to pull something together, to start making motion, and then everybody else will start come into fold with it. Because what happens is you get too many people into a process of starting something, then you never get anything done. And the other point is creating a database to do what? With the people that you get. And then we got to also look at, it's just not the artists. Like you said, when we talk about the music industry, we're talking about how we're going to how we're going to put it out. What's the videographer? What's the lawyer? It's a whole gamut of stuff that we need to look at, that somebody has to build a whole institution. But the best way to start that is, one, like this conversation. Now you've heard Brother Warren. You heard Brother Anton. You may not even know they existed. You got them. Then you start connecting. There's a lot of musical artists that are in the nation, and every artist that's an artist in the nation are not good. And I'm just saying like that. They're not good. So when you talk about also education, how we need to work on artist development, or artists knowing the business, because everybody that's in this culture doesn't know all the pieces that they need. So it's almost like you want to go into this with the mindset of finding the best amongst us that have been doing that, know what to do, to start having those conversations. But you don't have to wait. As we're trying to get that database, what happens is once you're in the movement and once you're in the work, and one of the things we know in the nation, once you travel, you'll start to meet people, you'll start to know people, and people will start to know you. And that's the way in the industry, once you're in the circles and building relationships, that database will form, and you can start working your partnerships together, but we have to be in the midst. I think sometimes we're looking for things to happen versus building the relationships that we already have to start a movement that others will come on to later, because it never starts by the masses.
Yeah,
well,
you know, because
argument there.
Right.
May I just say quickly that
go right ahead,
I want to go back to very quickly, I wanted to go back to Brother Attorney Warren's point about us as a people having resources. And
right.
I remember a few years ago, Brother Minister Rodney Muhammad out of Philadelphia, he did some research, and there were over, there's somewhere in the neighborhood of 9 million black households that would be, would qualify beginning at so-called upper middle class to affluent to all the way to the super wealthy. And I knew we had crossed a certain invisible boundary, and his name escapes me again, but the brother that paid off all the student loans a few years ago of the graduating class that year at Morehouse.
Robert Smith. Right. Mr. Private.
Yep.
Robert Smith. Now, when you start having billionaires and you don't know who they are, now
listen,
you know
come on.
Your right. wealth is growing. You know, we used to know, oh, it's Oprah. Oh, it's the gentleman that owned BET, Robert Johnson,
Bob,
I think.
Bob Johnson, yep.
But, yeah, Bob Johnson. We used to be able to name
mm-hmm.
them.
Right.
Those days are gone. But then there's a category of black people that have hundreds of millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars. You know, I'm a fan
literally.
Of the NFL. Tyreek Hill signed, and I've died that the Chiefs let him go, but Tyreek Hill, the wide receiver for the Chiefs, just signed a contract with the Miami Dolphins. He got a signing bonus. That means cash straight into his bank account, $52 million. Toward $120 million contract, and this is one athlete,
right. One person
in the you have the NBA, you have the NFL, where we dominate, we don't even want to talk about the performing arts and music, as you all are talking about. But we have black people now that are hedge fund managers, okay? You have people that are making $1 million a year on a job.
Right.
On a job.
Come on. That's right. That's right.
Okay. And so when he said unity is a weapon more powerful than a nuclear bomb, that is literally true, and that's the means by which we're kept down. And brother, I think Anton said it earlier about, you know, what we know as historically the house servant, you know, as was pointed out, and I'll shut up, in this film, when they did the film on Nat Turner, and the house Negro, the butler, said to Nat Turner and the brothers with him, "You're going to get all of us killed."
Come on.
We're already dead. Okay.
That's right. That's right.
You know, but you found an oasis. You're in the slave master's house wearing a suit and serving drinks. And so you want to sell us out so you can keep that little oasis that in your small mind is heaven. It's green pastures. This is what we have to shut down, is that
that's it, right?
Of our people. Mm-hmm.
That's it.
But, yeah, I totally appreciate this discussion. We got to keep this. Now, we're coming down to a close. I talked away a lot of our callers' time. We got Brother Hoyle, our wonderful fisherman out of Memphis, Tennessee.
As-salamu alaykum, beautiful show. For lack of time, I'm
going to
go down the line. This is beautiful. This is breaking down the Ministry of Arts and Culture. Beautiful job, Brother Warren and the other brother. I forget, what's the other brother's name? Excellent. The brother in the music industry.
Brother Anton.
Anton, all praises due to Allah. Beautiful. You know, I want to talk about our pioneers. You know, Sam Cooke, Otis Redding, you know, they fought for their masters. And I wanted to talk about the major pioneer, and Mike and Prince. You know, Prince had just turned to Warner Brothers right after that, after an 18-year feud, he regained ownership of his catalog. And after that, you know, that's when he had Slave and all of that. And I'm going to give you all some information y'all probably didn't know. You know, Young Dolph was, the rapper was killed here. You know, Young Dolph, and the brother was mentioning blockchain and the NFT. You know, he was educating the young rappers on getting into that technology, well, into the blockchain technology. And you know, that, you know, we just figured that out. All of a sudden he's dead, you know, and they can't, you know, they don't even know who's, you know, who the killer is. You know, you can go back to Tupac and all that. But, brother, you're beautiful how you were talking about the blockchain network and the NFTs. India has one called Chingari, which they're threatening because, you know, India is not with the United States. They're with the BRICS, the whole they're not even with the Western financial situation. They're with the BRICS, the Brazil, Russia, India, China, and they have their own, like you say, they have their own internet, and they're working on their own blockchain. But this is a way, you know, this NFT and cryptocurrency and all of this, this is a way for us to get free. But Allah, I'm going to say this right here, he's very strategic, and he's got to purify us. So in order for, you know, we got to separate and unite, but Allah, like he said, he's going to force us to unite, and he's going to make sure that he whoops us into shape where we're going to unite and do it in the right way, in a godly way. So we won't be filthy, won't be no envy and jealousy. And Allah is very strategic. He's going to, when we do it, we're going to do it in the right way. And we're going to do it, you know, where we're going to honor each other and support each other. And there won't be any backstabbing. And, you know, because when these nine ministries and we get all of our other entities coming, this is the kingdom of God we got to build. It won't be the kingdom of Negro. So we got am I right, Sister Ava? It ain't gonna be no kingdom of Negroes. It's gonna be the kingdom of God. So that's why you think we're gonna come out with the swan song. I don't want to be no swan singing my last swan. I want to be that trumpeter swan helping my minister. And I know I'll be along right with you, brothers. And keep up the good work, brothers. Excellent. Sister Ava, look, we need to have a part two to this. Praise be to Allah. Beautiful. Brother Terrence, Sister Pam.
Part four.
We need to. But this is powerful. Arts and culture is powerful, and this is, and these brothers are going to be powerful. They're going to be powerful entities, and you know, shaping our people for this. And I pray that they're going to help us get our people right. Beautiful show, Sister Ava. Thank you. Awesome.
Thank you, sir.
Praise the Lord. Well, Dr. Ava, we're right at the end.
Yeah, this went by so
right
fast.
Quick,
yes, sir.
Sister Pam sent me a YouTube link. I think we should at least acknowledge what has just happened. Jay Prince announced call for the artists, for Kanye and the other artists who had been dissed by the Grammys, to come and perform in Las Vegas at the same time, go head to head, toe to toe with the Grammys.
Come on now,
What stuck out to me was he said on an independent network, and I know Mr. Prince and represent him on the table. So I think that's very, I mean, that's powerful. That's a powerful move.
It's a
very,
yes,
sir.
Right there. Oh, yes, sir. Okay, we're down. We have less than a minute. I have to thank Brother Anton F. Muhammad, President and CEO of the Real Hip Hop Network, our entertainment lawyer and attorney and author of The Case for Separation, Brother Warren F. Muhammad, Sister Attorney Pamela Muhammad, our executive producer, Sister Rona Muhammad, my co-host, the one and only, Brother Terrence Muhammad, all of you who called in, all of you who are listening and logged in, this has been phenomenal, and we're just getting started. May Allah bless all of us with love and the light of understanding. Let's unite. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.